Log Talk Radio.
Shem Alek Ma Yelama Shem Ahezah Yelama Son Hashem Nevorat Fet Hakuig Again Ma Yelama Shem Alek Ma Yelama
of Sports Conversation on the Fight Network. I'm Don Henderson. We got our normal group of people ready to go tonight. Talk about the world of sports. Roger Henner, of course, is in Atlanta. Roy Cummings is in Florida. But before we start, a little bit of a sad note. We hate to start on a sad note, but tonight, Bill Berge, one of the great football players with the Philadelphia Eagles and our good leadership over there, Frank Carroll, our director of the program. And Frank, I know you got a little bit of a dedication for our buddy, Bill Berge.
Yeah, Don. I talked to Bill yesterday, and he's really not doing well. We appreciate everything the man has done. His stature alone was very big, but his heart was bigger than he was. I can relate that to back to 1988. My daughter was graduating from Concord High School, and I took her out to lunch, and Bill was there, and Bill came over, and we were talking for a few minutes. And he talked to her like she was one of his best friends. And he then turned around and said, for graduation present, Casey, I'm going to buy your lunch. Bill has suffered over the last few years, and this has had a remission. So we pray and we ask all our listeners to say a good prayer. If you don't pray, please keep a good thought for Bill Berge and his family.
Amen. Terrific guy and a great guy to work with. He's been so kind to us on the program, talked to us so many times. And Dick Vermeil is going to be on with us a little bit later on in the program. And, of course, he played for Dick one of the great days when Dick was coaching the Philadelphia Eagles. So, Frank, I think everybody that you and I and certainly Roger have been associated with over the years have known Bill well and wish him nothing but the very, very best.
Absolutely.
All right, we'll get the program underway, get back to the world of sports where we belong, and we'll go down to Tampa, Florida, as we always do at the outset of the program, because down there is Roy Cummings. And, Roy, before we talk about the Bucks or the Rays or the Lightning or whatever, you had the pleasure of going to a banquet last Friday night, and I know you'd like to say a little word about the number of people that were there, honoring one of the former writers for the Tribune that you guys worked with for so many years.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks very much. Yes, we are one of our brothers from the Tampa Tribune, Martin Fennelly, an incredible columnist, as talented as any in the nation, passed away a few weeks ago, and we had a gathering for him. It started off as, going to be a kind of a small gathering, just a bunch of, Tribune buddies getting together, but it turned out that nearly 300 people showed up at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa. The Buccaneers were nice enough to open up one of the plazas in their stadium for us, and it was extremely well attended, not just, by the number of people, but the quality of people that showed up. Tony Dungy was there. Tino Martinez was there. Joe McGrain, former baseball major league pitcher, was there. John Cooper of the Tampa Bay Lightning, Marty St. Louis showed up, spoke about Martin Fennelly, and it was really an incredible evening. Rondé Barber was there, a Hall of Famer, and I got to give credit to Warren Sapp, who didn't show, but had a lot to do with this happening. When Warren Sapp found out that Martin had passed, he said, "I'll get you the stadium. We'll make sure that you guys can give him the tribute that he deserves." Because, Martin was an incredibly unique human. I've never met anyone like him. Genius level intelligence, I would say. Incredible, Robin Williams-like wit and humor. As quick as anyone with a jab or a barb, but always in good faith, and a heart of gold. And it was really a tough loss for us. He was like a brother to me. I mean, I spent 20 years working alongside him, traveling with him on a regular basis as a hockey, when I'm covering hockey and the NFL. And clearly one of the best we've ever had, one of the best sports writers, sports columnists ever. He could criticize someone. You didn't even know he was criticizing. He had that kind of talent, and he had a way of making people laugh, and in print, and there's really nothing harder than to make someone laugh out loud with the printed word. But Martin Fennelly could do it with the snap of his finger, and unfortunately, well, I shouldn't say unfortunately, but fortunately for all of us and the readers, he didn't just snap his fingers and make it happen. He labored over his columns repeatedly, and yeah, it was a great evening, absolutely great evening, just a tremendous evening. And, kudos to the Buccaneers, Brian Ford, their CEO, and Nelson Luis, their public relations director, for helping us get this together and so that we could give Martin the tribute that he deserves. And it was great that so many from the community that knew Martin, came out to give him, the tribute that he deserves, because as great a columnist as there is, I mean, he literally has a closet in his home that is, it's like Fibber McGee's closet. You open it up and what pours out are all the awards that he's won. I mean, there are literally hundreds of writing awards that he's won. He's going to be sorely missed. It's unfortunate the Tribune hasn't been around for the last few years, but what's really unfortunate is that people haven't had the opportunity since 2016 to read Martin Fennelly's great columns. And so thanks for giving me the opportunity to to explain that and say that we absolutely miss him, and the community's going to miss him.
Well, no question about that. And let's jump into sports right now. And, of course, with all the free agent signings, we'll touch on a few that are important in this half hour because, as I said, Dick Vermeil is going to join us, and he'll talk about some of the Eagle choices and some of the other choices as well. But, Roy, let's talk about the Bucks because I think they got their two primary. They got themselves the quarterback they wanted for a relatively reasonable price, I guess. And, of course, Evans signed a nice contract for 2 years. And as he told your buddy the other day, our Hall of Fame presenter, he was going to play a couple more years and maybe call it quits. Well, he got a 2-year contract for a lot of money, so he can do that. And they have had all kinds of trouble signing kickers that last in Tampa, Florida, whether they be extra point kickers or field goal kickers. But it looks like they finally landed one that's going to stay around for a while, at least a couple more years, Roy.
Yeah, you're right. The Bucks, I would say, have had as good a free agency, start to free agency at least, as any team in the NFL. The signings aren't quite as big as, you know, Saquon Barkley going to the Eagles, that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, you know, this was a playoff team a year ago, and some of the key pieces that allowed it to be a playoff team are coming back. Not just Baker Mayfield and Mike Evans, but Antoine Winfield Jr. is coming back. The Bucs brought in another safety that they've had before as part of their Super Bowl team today. They're really making really good moves. And, the Bucs, the primary goal always under Jason Light is to re-sign the free agents that you've developed. It really is about draft and development with the Buccaneers. They draft you, they want to develop you, and they want you to earn that second contract and third contract. And that's what's happened. And so they are more than happy to give a franchise tag to an Antoine Winfield. They're more than happy to pay Mike Evans, the money he's going to earn this year, and a Baker Mayfield. Again, they are all about draft and development. And someone else, does some of the heavy lifting for you, as several teams did with Baker Mayfield, you benefit from it the most. Well, they'll take advantage of that. So the Bucs have had a really good start to free agency. I think they're at least as strong right now as they were a year ago. With the draft coming up and still other moves to be made and some money under the cap, I think there's probably still another surprise or two coming from them. And I won't be surprised at all if they're get stronger in the weeks ahead.
Roger, you're in Philadelphia following the Philadelphia Eagles, now in Atlanta following the Atlanta Falcons. And the Falcons got themselves a quarterback. More importantly, they're in the same South Division with Tampa Bay. So are they spreading some dirt around, or are they going to actually be a challenger?
Well, they could be a challenger with Kirk Cousins, but I'll tell you, there's a lot of unhappy fans in the Atlanta area because they're really upset that they didn't go after a number one quarterback last year, for going into this season, and that they it was such a mess. And it's a 4-year deal, and he's 36, maybe 37, but we're pretty sure it's 36. So you're talking about hopefully they can get a developmental quarterback, and that he can hold on for a couple of years at least, because when you get those 4-year deals, I mean they can be changed at any time. We'll talk to our brethren down in the D.C. area, too. I can't wait to talk to them tonight about the Commanders. And Dan Quinn has really done a number on the Dallas Cowboys, let me tell you. So, with some of the guys that he got in free agency, it's going to be the Cowboys North, I think, now. So. But anyway, the fans are not happy about – I mean, they're happy they got a quarterback, but they're really unhappy about some of the other moves that were not made previously that put them in the position they're in.
Well, Roy, one other note. Your favorite quarterback from the Bucs that traveled around, got down in New Orleans, and he got himself a very nice backup contract, a little over $8 million with possibility of going to 10. But he's never really played since he left the Bucs. I mean, he never really played as a first-string quarterback. And yet, he really, he made a home run, $8 million and an opportunity to play.
Well, it's the going rate for backup quarterbacks, you know, and especially someone who's got a body of work and has proven that he can win if he's got, you know, a decent team around him. I think that's the one thing that people tend to forget about Jameis Winston, is that when he's got a decent team around him, he can win for you. The problem with Jameis Winston is he's always playing, you know, he's more often than not played for teams that can't hold the lead. And, you know, with 3.5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, he's down by a score or two, and he's got to take chances that are, you know, that every quarterback, no quarterback wants to have to take, but he takes them. And as it is with most quarterbacks, you know, when you're taking those kind of ridiculous chances, it works against you. The odds are against you, and that's how his career's gone. But, you know, good for him because, look, I still think he can play at a high level in this league. I still think he can win in this league. Again, he just needs, you know, talent around him, a running game, and a defense that could hold the lead. And because he'll make you competitive, I promise you that. You know, he'll frustrate you as well. But you know what? Brett Favre frustrated people. Brett mm-hmm. Favre took chances. Jameis Winston is a gunslinger, and gunslingers are always going to take chances that you don't want them to take, and they're going to cost you at times. But you got to have a team around him that can make up for those mistakes, and that's really the key. But he can still play, and he's a great teammate. Players love playing for him, with him. So, you know, a good deal for Jameis Winston, and I'm happy for him because I believe he deserves it.
Well, the Browns have their problems. Of course, we like to see their coach win a little bit. He's from Philadelphia, but at the same time, you know, he's going to be backing up Deshaun Watson, and that's not going to be an easy move to do either. So you got two quarterbacks there now that are going to try to turn the program around in Cleveland. They got close at the end of last year. They made a run, but Roy just didn't quite get there. And so now we'll see what they can do in 24.
No, and you know, I can't imagine a quarterback duo more, you know, disliked by some fans, certainly, I'm sure, than Jameis Winston and Deshaun Watson. But at the end of the day, you know, look, I think Jameis Winston can push Deshaun Watson. I really do. Deshaun Watson is a great player. Look, I think I like the move. And not just for Jameis Winston. I think you know, I think you're going to start seeing more teams, you know, try to have, especially if you don't have, you know, if you've got a starter like Deshaun Watson, I think you got to have a backup because you can't trust the guy. You know, is he going to be available to you? And if he is, how well is he really going to play? You know,
and will he get hurt?
Moved by the Browns, and exactly that's, you know, that's the other part. You know, he has a tendency to get hurt a little bit. Jameis Winston seldom. You know, he's a workhorse, and he can you can count on him. He'll be there for you because he'll play through the pain if he's got any. And he's done it before, and my guess is he'll do it again. I think he's got an opportunity. That to me, that is a quarterback battle to watch. Just, you know, through training camp. It's, you know, they say they're going to give Jameis Winston an opportunity. Let's see if they really mean it. I hope they do because, again, I think it could work out really well for him and the team.
Going back to Atlanta for a moment, Roger, and, of course, Darryl Mooney, just the other way, he agreed to a 3-year contract for a little bit better than $39 million, and that may make people happy in Atlanta. You're getting a player for $39 million. He should do something for you.
Well, yeah, they are. But they also have plenty of weapons, and they were looking to, and I don't know whether they did it today or not. They were last night they were talking about getting another, excuse me, wideout. I just wanted to get back to the Cleveland situation. I read an article, and you fellows may have seen it, that Deshaun Watson – did not want Joe Flacco back on the team. And I don't know whether you saw that or not, but I'm wondering whether Joe Flacco where he'll wind up, because Roy, I agree with you, and I don't. It's not even a quarterback that is subject or a suspect when it comes to injury. You have to have a good backup quarterback anytime now, because look at the teams that went through. I think the Steelers. Then they go through three quarterbacks, and you got to protect yourself. If you have any, any thought of winning and getting into the playoffs. And I thought it was interesting that the Steelers signed Russell Wilson. I mean, so obviously the coach thinks that that's a good acquisition. What do you guys think?
Well, I like it too. Yeah, I don't mind. I think it's a good. I think it's a good acquisition. I agree with you. And just the converse to that, look what the Bears are doing. I mean, they got a quarterback and they didn't trade him. They didn't do anything with him. And now what are they going to do? They're going into the draft. Are they going to make a trade? Or are they going to keep a quarterback? They've gone through, like Cleveland, they've gone through a host of quarterbacks and personnel changes and never won over the last 8 or 10 years. Roy,
absolutely.
What do you do with a quarterback like that?
Well, to be honest with you, I think what you do is you alter your hierarchy, you alter your coaching staff and your management team, and you start building around quarterbacks and developing quarterbacks as opposed to bringing them in on a bad team, expecting them to perform miracles, and when they don't, you dump them.
Right.
I mean, the Bears just it's rinse repeat and here we go again. And, I absolutely would hate for any of the young quarterbacks in this year's draft to be the next Mitch Trubisky or the next Fields, mm-hmm. because management has to change its approach to how it's working with these quarterbacks, how it's developing these quarterbacks. They've got to build more around them. They've got to protect them better. They've got to give them running games. As I said with James Winston, you've got to give them defenses that work. But you've just got to be patient. You can't expect teams as bad as the Bears to bring in a quarterback and immediately snap your fingers and think that you're gonna be a winner. Not in a division like the NFC Central, where the Packers have been strong for years. The Lions are now getting stronger. The Vikings are always in the mix. You have to realize it doesn't work that way. You've got to be more patient. You've got to The examples are right in front of them. There's no better example, in my opinion, than the Packers. They've done it time and again. They did it with Favre and Aaron Rodgers. They did it with Aaron Rodgers and now Love. And, you let that quarterback come in, you sit him on the bench for a while. I mean, that's a team that what it should be doing, not looking at another young quarterback, but looking at a veteran quarterback. I mean, they would have been a good team for a Kirk Cousins to go to, although Kirk Cousins probably wouldn't go there. But that's the kind of quarterback that they need, is someone, a bridge to the next guy, someone who, knows, a Derek Carr type, someone who knows that, look, I'm going to be here for 3-4 years, and then I'm going to hand it off to the next guy, and the next guy is right here, and it's part of my job. Teach him and make sure that he's ready to take over when the time comes. And, the Bears just – it's a philosophy thing, and the Bears have to figure that out first. If they don't figure that out, they're going to continue to ruin – young quarterbacks, and because that's what they've done. If there's one thing the Bears specialize in, it's ruining young quarterbacks. You can go back to the, to the golden era of football, as some would say it. Back when, they had Jack Kincannon and Douglas and Bobby Douglas. I mean, they ruined
right.
those guys. I'm not sure. Jack Kincannon. There was much to ruin there, but Bobby Douglas was a different story. I mean, the one guy who survived it all was Jim McMahon, and good for him, because nobody else has survived.
We got to do it now, and if we're going to, I'm going to go in the other room so I don't bother my wife watching television here. Okay.
Okay. Hey, the great coach.
Well, you
mentioned going to be with us.
You mentioned Minnesota, and of course they added Green Bay running back Aaron Jones, but at the same time, a little bit of a surprise to me. Sam Donald, they gave him a pretty good contract. He was a big choice, third choice in 2018. but he didn't show anything to me in the 3 or so years that he had a chance to play, and even as he came in as an alternate, Sam McDonald hasn't really shown me much, Roger.
No, he hasn't at all that time with the Jets, and he didn't.
Right.
But I'll tell you,
right,
the guy that I'm anxious to see where he winds up is Mac Jones. You
he's
know, I think that if he is is he going to Jacksonville?
That's what I heard.
Okay,
yeah,
so he's going to go.
Yes, he's already gone.
Oh, good.
Yeah, he's already
no
gone to Jacksonville.
Then that's what I wanted to see. He's going to be with a former quarterback, a great coach, and a great quarterback coach. That will be a really good tandem in Jacksonville.
It won't hurt, might help.
Roy, I don't
know. On the Sam Darnold thing, Don, on the Sam Darnold thing, you know, here's what I see. After the Bears, right now nobody's more screwed up than the Panthers. So if Sam Darnold doesn't work out, you know, I think there's an opportunity there. I think Sam Darnold, I don't know that he's going to be great. I'm not sure he's a franchise caliber quarterback, but I think he can play in this league. I think he can make you competitive again. You build around him in the proper way, and give him some weapons to work with, and I think he can be effective. You know, you learn a lot when you struggle the way Sam Darnold has. Not a whole lot different than Baker Mayfield. You know, get these guys into the right position or with the right organization, with the right coaching staff, and someone who can instill a little bit of confidence in them, and they can play. I mean, you know, go back to the scouting reports and look at what Sam Darnold was when he was coming out. There was an awful lot of belief in him, and for good reason. And those skills haven't diminished. What's unfortunate is they haven't been enhanced. They haven't been polished. And that's what needs to happen. And, you know, your next guest is going to be able to talk about this a lot more than I can. But that's what has to happen with young quarterbacks. You just can't expect them to go to bad football teams and expect miracles. And when you do, you're just asking to, you know, again, for a 3 or 4 year, you know, period where you're really struggling.
And Roger, the other thing that surprised me a little bit, they talk about the lack of effectiveness of running backs, and yet running backs are really a big factor in this particular, you know, week that we're looking for free agents moving around. We'll talk about the Eagles in a second, but the running backs were all over the place going from one team to another.
Yeah, they really were. Well, I mean, I'll transition into what you're going to talk about with your next guest. But the biggest one is Saquon Barkley going to the Eagles. I mean, I think it's a great pickup for the Eagles. Yeah, another team gets weaker in your division. You get stronger at a position where you can never be strong enough, in my opinion. So I think it was a great pickup for them. And to me, that was the biggest of them all.
Roger?
Well, I was just wondering what the great coach has to say about that acquisition while Roy's on with us. Coach?
Yes, sir.
What did you think of
with
the
us right now? I didn't hear him say he was there. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, he's been there.
I was excited about it. I'm excited about it, yeah. Anytime you can put the ball in the hands of a guy that skilled, you got a chance to win, yeah.
Let me just say, Hall of Famer, Dick Vermeil, outstanding coach in the National Football League for so many years. And, Dick, first of all, welcome back on the program. I know that Bill Berge was a great player under your tutelage in Philadelphia. We certainly all wish him the best tonight. We've dedicated the show to him this evening.
Well, great. Yeah, he's a special man in my life.
Roger?
Well, it's just a shame, you know, his health situation, Coach, and But we're all happy. Roy, did you want to ask the coach anything while you're still with us?
Well, I think he asked the question that I was most interested in hearing his answer to, was how he felt about the Saquon Barkley acquisition. So I'll leave it to you guys, and we'll talk again next week.
Okay. Have a great week, Roy.
Thanks, coach, guys. Thanks for having me, as always. Appreciate it.
Yep. It is a great acquisition, and they made some other key acquisitions with a couple of 3-year and a 1-year contract. And I'll tell you, free agency has certainly changed in the NFL, hasn't it, over the last few years?
Well, they've gotten so aggressive, you know, and the salary cap keeps growing each year, and it allows people that didn't have a lot of money left in the cap, all of a sudden they get another 30 or 40 or 50 million because the cap expansion, and so it really perks up free agency again.
No question about that. And, of course, Washington is one of the biggest. Quinn coming in there with an opportunity to really rejuvenate the whole team. I mean, his salary cap space is somewhere around $65 or $70 million. So he's got a lot of room to do things. And it just didn't happen like that over the last couple of years. You're absolutely right. Tell us what you think about that.
Well, I'm not sure who you are. Are you talking about the Commanders?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, they've struggled for a long time, and yes, they have new ownership. He actually a rookie in the NFL, so to speak. Yes, 76ers and that kind of stuff, but that's a different game, and you don't need as many good guys as you do in football. And, you know, plus in free agency, a player has a choice. He's not drafted. He doesn't have to go to the Commanders. If he gets an equal or somewhere close to deal somewhere else, he'll go where he has a better chance to win and maybe put a great ring on his finger. He won't automatically go someplace like the Commanders that have been struggling, you know. But sometimes guys just don't want to go somewhere and lose.
Roger?
Well, I'll tell you, Coach, you're right about that. And we were talking about the Falcons acquisition of Kirk Cousins. And the fan, as I mentioned, the fans are upset. They felt the Falcons should have gone after a number one quarterback last year, and that's why they had a lost season. They have a lot of talent, including the young man from Miami, who, of course, you and I and Don are familiar with because he went to Abington High School, and then I think it was Archbishop Wood. And a real great kid. The one thing he said, he wanted to know when Wawa was going to be in the Atlanta area. So he's our kind of guy. But
I bet you they're not far away right now.
Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right. They're really moving. But, you know, what do you think about Cousins? You think that can make a big difference in the Falcons since they do have a good cadre of receivers?
Yeah, my attitude about him, if he can't do it, then it can't be done.
There you
no,
go.
This guy, he can play, you know, and I've seen him play when he was at the Commanders, then the Redskins, and I liked him then. But, you know, all quarterbacks, the great ones and the average ones, they're always better when they're surrounded by a support staff, equal and talented at their position that will allow the quarterback to be as good as he has the ability to be. And I think this is going to happen with this guy. You know, if Atlanta's talent is supposed to be very good, I don't follow them that closely. If they're that good, then he'll be a difference maker.
Dick Vermeil, our special guest in this segment of the program. We certainly thank him very much for coming on, the Hall of Famer. And, Dick, just as a technical question, when you were coaching, let's start with the Eagles. Maybe it changed as you went along to other clubs. How many assistants and scouts and so forth did you have working under you as opposed to what we see today? I mean, the bench is almost filled with people. Where are all these people? What do they do?
They get in each other's way. But no, when I came to the Eagles in 1976, I had a 10-man coaching staff. It was the largest staff in the NFL. Okay. I had a couple of head coaches ask me what I was going to do with all those guys. And I said, well, I had 10 assistants at UCLA. And that's what it took me to win, and I need 10 here. And when I came back into coaching, I think I had 15 coaches in St. Louis, and then I think I had 18 in Kansas City. But now some teams got 25 coaches. I don't know where right. You got to get a big staff room.
Roger, you're up.
You know, I'll tell you, you just brought up a great point, Dick. You got Chuck Clawson. You played Ohio State. You won the game. And then the next thing, Chuck Clawson told me that all of a sudden he's getting a call from you. And Betsy said, Dick Vermeil wants you to come on his staff with the Eagles. And he tells that story. And he says when it was a lot more money than he was making from what he
made. Yeah, I'm sure it was. None of us made any money in those days. But having Rod Dauhauer and I ran the offense at UCLA. And we watched every game Ohio State played in preparation. And we'd played them early this season, got beat badly. So we really studied them. And what I was so impressed with how well their defensive linemen played. So, yes, it's a reflection of good talent, but it was also a reflection of somebody who's doing a hell of a job of coaching these kids. So when I got this job, I called him up and asked him to come with me, and he came. And 2 years later, I brought George Hill with me, okay, who was Woody's defensive coordinator to coach my linebackers. And just great football coaches and great people. Of course, we've lost both of those guys now. They're long gone. God bless them. But they were very much responsible for a high percentage of the success we had in Philadelphia. Believe me, without them, I don't win.
Dick, the one thing that was very impressive in every stop that you made that I know of anyway, and that was when you came with the Eagles, you and Leonard Toews had a great relationship with the owner of the ball club. And when you went to St. Louis, I'm assuming it was the same way with the ownership there. And when you went to Kansas, the same way out there. Did you always have a pretty good relationship with the people when you went in to talk about not only salaries, but to talk about what are we going to do about getting a particular player that we need at this particular time? Reeve with Kansas City is amazing. I mean, he just keeps coming up with players. He has a hole, and he fills it in about 14 seconds. How tough is that?
I never had an agent, so I never had anybody between me and the owner.
Right.
I never had a contract negotiation for my own salary. They determined. I said, that's great. Okay. And, you know, I was a little bit naive, and I was a little bit grateful, maybe too grateful, but I appreciated the opportunities they were giving me. And I always felt if you're going to have a good organization, Kansas City taking that job, and Lamar Hunt, the owner of the team, one of the finest men I've ever met in my life, came and asked me if he could come to our Saturday morning team meeting. I said, Lamar, you own the team. You can run a meeting if you want. So that's the first time he'd ever been in a team meeting. This is what he told me. 2 weeks later, he comes in and he says, can I bring a friend? I says, Lamar, I'm going to remind you again. You own the team, and the chain of command starts to do whatever you want to do. Just let me know. You know, so I'm prepared to introduce people and pay proper respect. But, I brag a little bit on this. I'm the only guy that coached three teams and never got fired. So,
well, that says a lot about you, Coach.
Thank you. But it's also about treating people with respect and bringing them into the inner circle of what's actually going on. We didn't have any secrets. Everybody knew what was going on and why we were doing it and what the process was and what was expected of them. But if I didn't have the authority from the ownership, then you're restricted. You know, you could hire your own people. Why do you think Andy Reid brought his own staff in? I mean, he brought in the general manager he wanted to work with because he trained him himself, you know. So, it makes a big difference. It really does.
Roger?
Well, yeah, there's no doubt about it. And, you had Carl with you, and, I mean, he just did a phenomenal job. And you know, obviously also in Kansas City. And it means so much. And so many times we see the owners getting too involved and, Dallas could be one, but yet, you know, Jerry owns it and he is a football guy. And, there's so many others and that's why, they don't win. But, you just had the knack. You would talk to everybody that worked in the Eagles organization, you were their friend, they were your friend. And I think that's the key. And so many, like Chip Kelly's, that was one of the criticisms that he felt that, you know, he gave the impression he was aloof from, like, the guard at the door, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I just, to me, the people are more important than the the game. I mean, and the people you have create the atmosphere and the environment in which people enjoy working, and they help you set the tone throughout the entire building that you're all working together for one common cause. You know, heck, next week I'm having dinner with my video guy, Mike Dougherty, from the Eagles. And George
Great
Diamond,
guy.
Who was the secretary there from 76 on, okay? You develop these great relationships in that atmosphere, and it works for me, okay?
Dick, one of the things that surprised me in the papers the last couple of days is that, and you were talking about Lamar, and it seemed to me the last time I was out there, I just finished all the new training facility and all, which was absolutely beautiful. And they're saying now that, of course, the stadium is Arrowhead. Let's face it, it is old. There's no question about that. Not as old as Buffalo is, but it's old. And the players are complaining that the facilities aren't up to standard for 2024. Maybe you haven't been out there in a while. That just surprised me a little bit because
they're a lot better than it was when I was there, you know.
I thought the Hunt family was – I thought they were very much in – I thought they were very much equipment.
Guys. Yeah, all right. Let me finish what I was going to say. I said Don Shula coached the Miami Dolphins to the only undefeated football team with football, and his facilities were absolutely terrible. Okay, I was in those facilities when I was in broadcasting. I'd go in there, and Don Shula hardly had room to put a chair behind his desk in his office. You know, they had nothing. But, you know, today everybody's spoiled. You know, and it's a totally different environment. Totally, go to some college campuses and see the facilities they have today. Oh my gosh, it's unbelievable. There are college facilities that have facilities much better than any of the best NFL teams. Why? Because it's
Alabama will knock you over. You go down there.
Yeah,
and Georgia, I think. Yeah,
I've ever seen. Clemson's unbelievable.
Roger.
No. Go ahead, Coach, because you're exactly right. My daughter and son-in-law went to Bucknell, and I was by there a few months ago, and I could not believe the construction that's underway to get the facilities up so that they can draw better players. And, you know, and there you're talking about basically a Division I AA, you know, team.
Yeah.
And it's you're exactly right. And, you know, I thought what's funny, there's a young man. Well, first of all, I was shocked that Penn has, I believe I counted, 13 Georgia players on that squad. And I met this young man who went to school right here near me, and he's pre-med at Penn. And his father was from South Philly, and then he played at Bishop Kendrick and at Penn State. And he told me that the dorm for the freshman at Penn is not near Franklin Field. That's what he told me.
Gotta get him in shape to walk to practice.
That's right. But all these schools are upgrading because they have to get the draw, to get the players.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's where the
very competitive.
I have a former Clemson player that brings me to a game, Steve Kenny, and in Clemson, and you can't believe the facilities they have. The kitchen looks like the hotel.
The NFC East was always the prime, in my view anyway, always the prime portion of the National Football League. The Commanders have not been a factor for such a long time. But the Giants and the Eagles, those games, in my mind, during my lifetime of working in this business, were the greatest games in the world. You'd go anywhere to see the Giants and the Eagles play one another. But, you know, Washington, did you think that was, over the years, the best, most competitive division of all the divisions in the National Football League?
Well, if it wasn't the best, it was the second best. But I can't tell you who was better. I mean, it was tough. It was really tough. At one time, you had Parcells in the Hall of Fame. George Allen's in the Hall of Fame. Don Coryell's in the Hall of Fame. they all pass through this conference. And there's only 28 of us, or 29 of us now in the Hall of Fame, and a lot of them pass through this division. Okay.
I tell you, Dallas Cowboys, the whole team's in there. Bill Berge told us many times on this show, he said, when you win that game, it was almost like winning the Super Bowl. The next week you couldn't get up because you've been so much into that Dallas Cowboy win that it was hard to get back together again.
Yeah, well, I didn't do a good job, I tell you that, okay?
Yes, you did. Yeah, come on. You know, that was a tremendous team at that era. And, hey, you beat them so that you got into the Super Bowl. That was the key, right?
Yeah, you had to do that. Just like in the old days, you had to go through Pittsburgh to get to the Super Bowl, and normally you didn't get there.
Yeah, that's right. You know, that's it. There's a good one. What's your opinion about Russell Wilson? You know, he signed with Pittsburgh. Do you feel that he still has a lot left in the tank, Coach?
I do. Yeah, I do. I think it's a very positive reflection on the Seattle program where he was so effective. It's so good. I mean, they're talking about him being a Hall of Fame player. Now he can't play? Come on.
Yeah.
But I think that's a positive reflection on the program and the people that were coaching him in Seattle. They had him playing at a high level. A level high enough he's got a fortune to go to Denver, okay? If he hadn't been playing at a high level, Denver wouldn't have played him that.
Dick, when you look at the last couple of weeks and the training, the schools and so forth, how fast can you run 100? How, you know, 4.4, 4.5, 4.9, whatever it may be. Was that a big factor when you were playing the scouting? Did they have any kind of scouting where teams came together like that, or was it all a matter of checking them while they were playing in college?
Well, it's important. The game is more wide open today. It's a faster game than it's ever been. You know, you're not in a foxhole anymore. They're spread all over the field, and there's movement all over the field, and the rules have changed that allow the offense a big advantage in many ways during the game. And so that's changed. But I don't know. It's a more exciting game, really. You're getting more teams scoring into 30 points and making big plays, and quarterbacks are throwing throws that in the old days you wouldn't attempt to throw, and now the receivers catch almost anything that's close to them. In the old days, you considered an uncatchable ball. One of the reasons Harold Carmichael's in the Hall of Fame is I think he was one of the first guys that started catching the uncatchable ball.
Mm.
And once somebody else starts showing that they can make that kind of catch, it's a great example for other people, just like the first guy that ever runs a four-minute mile. All of a sudden, more guys start running. Some guys make these great one-handed catches. Well, hell, now you see even high school games. It's amazing how this wide receiver position is the most improved position in the NFL.
Roger?
No doubt. Yeah, what did you think about the retirement of Jason Kelsey and Cox? Two great Eagles. They were on the Super Bowl team, and I'm certain that Kelsey's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Do you think that Cox is in that category?
Well, he's close. Okay, he's not Reggie White. He's not Lawrence Taylor. Okay, he's not maybe the Deacon Jones or these kind of guys. But he's a damn fine player. And especially the last 2 years, he played better than he did 3 years ago. And but Kelsey, someone will play his position, but they won't replace him. Okay, because I think he's a magnetic force to a team attitude. And he's a tremendous example of what the old-fashioned pro football player was really like,
Dick, we have a young fellow that's really just starting out in this business, and Frank tells me he's on the phone right now. So, Trevor, talk to the Hall of Famer, Dick Vermeil. You got a question for him? Go to it.
Coach, I just have one question. I just first want to say it's an honor.
Hold on just a second. Hold on. You got too much noise behind you. Wherever you are, they got to turn the TV down or whatever's on behind you. Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Hello there.
Just want to say that you're a legend of the game, and I really appreciate the chance to be able to ask you a question.
Sure.
What was it like being able to be around some of the greats in the NFL, Kurt Warner, Torrey Holt, some of those guys, Marshall Faulk, Can you just briefly talk about that real quick? I know you've probably been asked that a million times, but just for my sake.
You know, I was always a driven guy, but the real driving force were the players I coached. My motivation came from them. I mean, they're so stimulating people. You know, it's changed today. The free agency is so much, you know, it's harder to maintain a long-time relationship, you know. Bill Berkey is one of my closest friends, okay? We've hunted together, we've drank wine together, we've celebrated birthdays and all these kind of things. And in today's world, you're rent a player. And if you're fortunate, you get to keep one like Kelsey got to stay. But, you know, if he wasn't the kind of person he was, he'd probably go on someplace else to try to get another $1 million, you know. That's just how college is becoming the same way with the NIL. But to me, it was the certain kinds of players really motivated me. You know, the Harold Carmichael, the Jerry Sizemore, the secret guy within the offensive team, London Fletcher, Mike Gruder-Doria, our center at the Rams. Not a heralded big-name guy, but he inspired me for the way he played, the way he prepared, and how well he did certain things, and all these kind of things. No, those guys are the guys that motivated me.
Dick, as we wind up this segment, and thank you so very much for being with us, but more importantly, I want to wind it up by saying a great football coach, a Hall of Famer, but also a wine steward. Now, let's give the wine a little bit of what's the blend for the fall? What do you got on tap that people can get right away that – you really are enjoying.
Yeah, the only way they can get our wine is go online. We're a wine club organization. We have like 530 wine club members, and a high percentage of our wine goes directly to our wine club members. And then we have a tasting room in Napa. People come in and out of there, and they can go just Google for me a wine. It's expensive wine. It's quality wine. We have three Cabernets. We have other wines too. Our three Cabernets, two of them got a 95 grade, and one of them got a 93 grade. That's A-minus grade for, you know, a little tiny organization. We're selling right now 1,600, about 35 cases of wine, okay? And this year, because the crop was so much better, we're going to be bottling about 200, 2,300 cases of wine. So we're not
terrific.
Very big. Yeah, we're not very big, but we think we're very good. Thank you.
That's the key.
Dick, thank you so very, very much. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, and just to talk football and talk about personalities and the people that you got along with. I don't know anybody you didn't get along with, so there must be somewhere, someone, but I don't know where he is.
I know where you are, believe me. I know where you are. That's, you're pleasing them all. You're not doing a good job. All right.
That's
hey,
right.
Thank you, guys.
God bless,
Coach.
God bless you, Dick. And your wife.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
All right, let's go to Trevor next because we'll talk about USF football, and we're going to go from one football to another, the National Football League and Hall of Fame coach Dick Vermeil. Trevor, what do you got on for us tonight on USFL? Where'd Trevor go?
Pretty much major going on as of right now. It looks like there was a big acquisition regarding the Memphis Showboats. They let go quarterback Cole Kelly, who led them on a 5-3 stretch last year, 1,333 yards and 7 touchdowns. And they let him go and brought in another guy that played 2 seasons with the Michigan Panthers, 2022 and 2023. He started out with the Pittsburgh Maulers in 2022, but quarterback Josh Love, he had a game one last year in 2023. He actually had a game of 90% completion percentage. He's a smart guy. He knows the game, high IQ. I think it's a good pickup for them. He's obviously going to be quarterback number 3 behind Troy Williams, and then Case Cookus taking up that starting position because he's clearly the best quarterback and highly touted by pretty much everyone amongst the circles of the USL and being highly regarded as the best quarterback in the league, probably up there. A lot of people will argue A.J. McCarron because he's established, but from what I've seen as of late, I just think that, you know, youth has Case Cookus's favor. But I think the Memphis Showboats made a good move there. by kind of switching up the quarterback room a little bit, getting a guy that you know is going to be a backup, but will definitely be a good support piece for your two guys you know will most likely see the field. But overall, I think the Memphis Showboats, I just want to talk about them for a brief second. They've probably had the best offseason, them or the Michigan Panthers. A lot of guys were just cut around 15 to 16 on each team. They did also have half games for scrimmaging purposes because there is no preseason. So you got to, you know, warm up each squad and get them used to playing each other somehow. So that took place last weekend, and you can see the highlights and some of the tape on social media and stuff. So that was pretty cool. I will say this, it definitely looks like the Birmingham Stallions are here for a vengeance, and they're ready to go for that three-peat in all purposes. St. Louis in the half game, A.J. McCarron was picked off three times in a row in all three of his offensive reps. It was bad. It really was bad for St. Louis. I felt bad for them. They didn't really look like they were ready to compete, but I'll say this, Skip Holtz has his guys ready to go. I mean, they have a fire under their butts, and I will say this, when Michigan played D.C. In their half game, it was also kind of similar. Michigan picked off Jordan Te'amu, a guy who I, hold at a high standard as well, multiple times, showing that their defense is very ready to go. And quarterback E.J. Perry for them is looking good as well. But do I know who's going to be quarterback number one in Birmingham yet? I don't. They got Matt Corral. They got Adrian Martinez. And then they do have J.M.R. Smith, a guy that's been there for two seasons with Skip. They did let go of Jalen Morton, who was holding that quarterback four role, but he was a backup all last year. Saw some time, late in the season, but never really had a chance. But, they did have to let him go due to the fact that, I will say this, Adrian Martinez looks really good. And I'm excited to see what they have brewed up in that quarterback battle in Birmingham. But I really do believe that it's going to be a very competitive league this year. I'm really excited.
Roger? Trevor, talking about A.J. McCarron, had a great career at Alabama. I thought he was going to do something in the NFL. Obviously, I was wrong. But let me ask you, does this guy have any chance to do anything? In the new league, and obviously I guess he's finished as far as the NFL is concerned, but I'm really surprised that that he hasn't had a much better career than he's had.
I will say this about A.J. McCarron, although he, like you said, he was esteemed college quarterback. You would have had high expectations. Anyone would have, but he was that career backup in the NFL. Had some moments here and there, had some chances, but, never really seized the moment. But he actually did opt out of his contract with Cincinnati to come play for the St. Louis Battlehawks, and he did play for them last year. Led them to a 7-3 season, but they missed the playoffs. They didn't win when they needed to the most. He threw for over 400 yards in a couple games last year in the XFL, and obviously there was a lot less competition in terms of quality of talent. So this year it's going to be a lot different. He's going to have a lot more of a challenge, but he showed that he can still sling the rock for sure, and he can make a name for himself in this alternative type of football. This is where guys like that can kind of thrive and honestly get a legacy in their own way and make an impact on the game, not in the NFL, but in a different type of level. But he did show some good play last year, I will say that. They had a winning record. They just didn't make the playoffs, which was shocking, especially, he was the right guy for St. Louis to bring in because they were filling house. I mean, they had, like I was talking about, guys, they had over 60,000 people in attendance in some of their games. I mean, they had people rocking their stadium, and he was slinging the rock and putting up some good big plays and, getting people excited, but they just didn't, get over that hump and get into the playoffs, which was unfortunate. They're expected to, according to DraftKings at least, but according to, a lot of circles as well, they're considered a top three team going into the season. So, people do hold A.J. McCarron high in regards of the UFL standards.
Well, that's encouraging. Because I was always impressed with him.
Trevor, we're March the 12th today. We're getting into the home stretch. When are the final cuts, and when do we get going full blast?
Kickoff for week one is March 30th, but we are expecting final cuts in that week leading up till that point. So I think March 27th or 28th are final cuts, but that's slimming the roster down by 8 spots, which was definitely it's going to be pretty brutal. 16 to 15 cuts per team. Like I said last week, I'm not going to lie, a lot of really good players were cut. Lance Lenoir, Isaiah Zubert, so many good guys were let go. And it's a shame because there's just not enough teams. And, I talked about this consistently on here and especially on my podcast. I really wish that they went with, like, maybe a 10 to 12 team method. I know the 5 per conference wouldn't have worked, but there's just so many good players still out there for this league that, that are just going to go to the CFL and get locked up for 3-year deals. I mean, the CFL is having a great time right now. They brought up guys like Cam Echols-Looper, Jakeer Pearson. I mean, they brought up guys that showcased a lot of talent in the USFL and the XFL the past couple years. And it's a shame because we're losing that talent and losing their primes to, non-American football, which I don't know. I'm not really a fan of CFL because it's kind of a weird alteration of football itself. Alternative football regarding the USFL and XFL, they don't really make changes to the game in terms of, like, massive changes to the NFL standards. It's just, the uniforms, the production value, the funding, the audience, the television exposure, everything's just a lot smaller. But, I mean, AFL is different. It's a lot. It's a 50-yard field. Same with some of the other leagues like FCF and Spring League and stuff. Spring League was a full field, but they just didn't have the attendance. But you like to see this league in its professional setting that it's acquiring by getting each team in its own setting and in respective city. So that, like I said last week, home field advantage is in play. There's actual stakes regarding, teams traveling around. It's just I wish that they did structure this merger to keep in, maybe 2 other teams from each league, just so that these other guys that, didn't make this cut were able to kind of be acquired. Because I swear, like, at least 2 to 3 rosters could be made up by the guys that were let go. And it's just a shame to see them not have a spot. I know they might get picked up because, like I just said at the beginning of my little segment here, Josh Love got picked up, but and he was let go by the Panthers a couple weeks back. But, for all these guys, it's a slim to minimal margin of, success of them getting on a roster before the season starts, especially with it being, I think, 17 days now until the season starts. But we're expecting, like I said, around, the late 20s to have the final 8 guys, 9 guys cut off of each team. Some guys are holding an extra guy. Some teams are holding an extra guy on the roster right now just because it's a little, like I said, competitive. It's hard to decide. But I'll say this. The teams right now that have impressed me the most, just based on the half game I saw, number 1 is the Birmingham Stallions. I think they're the favorite by far going into the season by literally everyone. Number 2, I got to go with the Michigan Panthers. I think everyone is not really giving them the respect that they deserve. Mike Nolan's a good coach. They got a good system there. I like E.J. Perry at that quarterback position. They got good receivers in Joe Walker and Trey Quinn, a former NFL guy. I think they're ready to lock and load. And number 3, I definitely got to go Memphis. I think the USFL teams are loaded. I really do, respectively. Not trying to be biased, but I'm just being honest. But,
Well, the one thing about it is the margin of difference. You touched on it, and that's true. The margin of difference between one player that's cut today and he goes to another team and he becomes an outstanding player. It's just one of those things that you got to be in the right place at the right time with the right position. Roger?
Well, that's right. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You got to have, as the coach said about the Falcons with Kirk Cousins, you got to have the surrounding cast to be successful. And it's like that in any sport, really, but even I think more so in football. In basketball, 1-2 guys can really carry the team. I think less in hockey, but you can, have some great superstars. But in football,
it's definitely a team game, and everybody has to be united and on the same on the same plane.
And it, I do believe that, you know, with this slimming down and, you know, the merger in a sense provide, you know, the opportunity for us to see a very good product on the field in terms of what this league's ceiling is in terms of talent-wise, because, you know, some of the best guys are going to be either former NFL players or guys that are very undiscovered. And we saw that with, you know, Kevontae Turpin. He had some legal issues around the time he was coming out of college and was kind of just forgotten about. And, you know, look at what he became. He got a huge deal from the Cowboys, MVP for the USFL in 2022. A huge reason, you know, that happened was because of that spring football opportunity to showcase what he could do on the field. Now we are going to have eight teams full of guys that, you know, have that opportunity, but have that ability to showcase those similar, not, I'm not going to say identical abilities, but, you know, showcase that talent. And that talent's going to be competing at a very high level. And, you know, it's to say, but, you know, the NFL has this with so many teams, 32 teams. There's, I think, less than 1,500 jobs available to be a player in the NFL, 1,500 slots. But with this league, they have to kind of minimize that just to get, you know, proper play, proper scoring, proper, you know, officiating. Everything has to be kind of perfect for this to be able to take off the way they want it to in that regard. And in terms of, like, production value, and obviously the quality of play is so huge.
Trevor, what's your guesstimate about going to 10? How do you think there's a good possibility within a year, within 2 years, or just wait and see what happens this year, and then the structure of the league will decide whether there's enough talent and whether they want to travel, make go to 10 teams. What do you think?
Man, I really think that it would be a good idea. I like the 10 idea. It's just I don't know how the scheduling would work with that. So I think that if they were to expand, it would have to go to 12. And the beautiful thing about it is that the UFL now has ownership, and, you know, the USFL did a great job of patenting and getting and reacquiring all ownership of former teams, logos, and uniforms from the past USFL in the 80s. So they have ownership essentially over, gosh, probably over 32 teams and titles. And they can relocate old teams and rebrand old teams and revive old teams, you know, like the Philadelphia Stars, like the Pittsburgh Maulers, you know, like the Seattle Sea Dragons, the Tampa Bay Bandits. And we could see potentially a four-team expansion. If this first season goes the way I'm hoping, and averaging at least 1.5 million viewers per game, that's where it had, like, that has to be the baseline, I think. I think that has to be the goal, because that was the peak for some USFL games. They need to establish a baseline with their respected markets. I think within 2 to 3 seasons, I think we can expect an expansion. But I want to be realistic. It might be longer. It might be 4. It might be even 5. But I think, you know, if they are able to expand, you know, player pay and roster size, that might actually solve some of those issues. But, you know, that might be coming up within 2 seasons. I could see that maybe changing, you know, rule changes and some of those logistical changes that, you know, might look similar and mirror the NFL.
Roger?
Yeah, well, what they really, I think, want to do is to make sure that everything is settled before they make that move to really expand. But the other thing is, one of the things you just mentioned about numbers in the NFL, you know, as you know, and I'm big into this, youth and high school sports is really growing. It's a big market. It's going to be bigger. And one of the things that's drawing girls to flag football over basketball is that you've got five, you might have a roster of 10, but in flag football, you're probably going to have 21, 25 on the team, you know, with a kicker and everything. And that's what's really one of the factors that's driving girls to play football from basketball, is that there's more opportunity to play where you wouldn't be a bench warmer so much. So I'm just intrigued by some of the points that come out about youth and high school football. Don, you'd be surprised to see this. I'm watching Lehigh Colgate. Colgate's up 45-26, and the officials are wearing the old stripe shirts, the zebra shirts. And Trevor is too young to have ever seen referees in stripe shirts.
I have watched Will Chamberlain highlights, man. I know.
Yeah, but that's highlights. I'm talking about in okay. you're a young guy, you know.
Live television, you're right. I've never experienced that, no.
I'll tell you. Doug sent me a video of the championship NBA game between Portland, a game I broadcast on the radio, and Chris Schenkel, of course, is on TV, but for CBS. But the 76er-Portland Trailblazer game out in Portland, Trailblazer game 6 of this World Championship Series, and you wouldn't think it was the same game. I sent him a text back and an email back. I'm looking at this game. They called 3 3-second calls in the first period. I haven't seen a 3-second call in the NBA in the last 10 years.
Corky Calhoun was on that team, Portland, right? They won the championship.
Jack
Ramsey.
Yeah. So he sent me a tape of it. So I was watching the game today, and I'm saying, holy smokes, this is the game. It was so great. And now I can't watch it. I just can't watch the NBA anymore.
I know. Me too. You know.
So Trevor, it's going to be interesting to see what the football is, because, again, you know, they go to all different types of rules and regulations and things that Dick was talking about, and things that Bill Berge, Bill Berge we were talking about earlier in the show, talking about players coming over the middle and take them, you know. You don't let them fly by. You can't touch anybody coming off the line of scrimmage if you're a wide receiver. Sure, they're making great plays, as Dick said. They're making impossible plays, but nobody touches them. It's a different game. You just run fast and catch the ball. That's all. So it's going to be interesting to see how this league does, whether they have the same capacity to draw an audience with this type of game.
I will say, based on the last two seasons of the USFL, I didn't miss a game. I know I've mentioned that before. But in these leagues, in these alternative leagues, they let the players play. It is hard contact. It's some of those hits you might get a flag for in the NFL, but, you know, they'll let fly. They let the receiver and the corner get physical. They let the best man win. That's what I like about these, because it's uber competitive, because it's a lower level in terms of money and financial status. But these guys have the chance and opportunity, like you guys brought up, to showcase what they can do. And it's on a minimal roster with only 50 at the end of the day. But, you know, if they're able to go out there and put out that physical tape and that winning tape, then, you know, that's all that matters. But I promise, you know, based on the USFL, there was full contact. It kind of brought me back to that early 2000s Buccaneers football, when we had the season tickets and we would always go see the good old A-Train play. It reminded me of that gritty type of football. And that's why I was so drawn to the USFL originally. And, you know, that's why I'm going to be, you know, watching closely. And, you know, I'm going to be a fan of the USFL until, you know, it tells me not to, in a sense. So I'm right there with you guys. I really do hope this league hits us, you know, with the expectations that we do have set for it.
Trevor, thank you very much. Next week this time will be only a little bit over a week from the opening of the season. Thank you very much. We'll chat about it again. We'll be much closer to the rosters and the rest of the league and how it's going to go. But thank you so much. We'll get together next week.
Have a good
week, guys.
Trevor.
Mike Simzak's on the line right now.
Take care.
Of course, we got a number of specialties with Mike. football, baseball, basketball, hockey, everything's happening in Washington, Baltimore right now. But I want to talk about soccer first because the superstar of the league got a shin injury, and he did not play in the next game. But how's it set right now for Messi as far as the conditioning, and how's the shin?
I haven't really gotten a ton of updates that I've seen unless something came out. And the my guess is it's hopefully a minor injury, and we'll see him shortly. It's especially unfortunate if it's anything major because Argentina is playing El Salvador in Philadelphia coming up next Friday. So all they've been talking about recently on the air trying to promote the game is come to Philly, come see Lionel Messi. Here's your chance to see Lionel Messi in Argentina, and it's going to be really unfortunate if he's not able to play due to injury. My guess would be no matter what the severity of the injury is, they might hold him out this weekend, knowing that there's an international break coming up. And then let him get some time and then bring him back after the break.
Right.
You know,
they held him out. They held him out on Tuesday. He played. The injury was what, Sunday?
Yeah.
Sunday or Monday. I can't think of it. Either Sunday or Monday. And he was held out of the next game. And so we'll just have to wait and see. As you said, we'll get an update on. I haven't seen anything. I just checking the papers every day to see if there was going to be some kind of update leading into the next game, but I didn't see anything.
Part of that may be they just want to keep anything related to him close to the vest, because so much of any sort of ticket sales promotions is based on that involves Messi, or anything involving Messi is based on his availability. And if people come out wanting to see him, and if you know he's not going to be there, whatever it is, those tickets decrease in value rather rapidly.
Roger, you're up.
And Mike, the game in Philadelphia at the Link, what does it look like as far as fan participation? You know, ticket
sales? I haven't gotten any ticket numbers on it yet, and it's still a ways away. If you hear that Messi is going to play, if there's some inkling that he's going to play, I think you could get a pretty good crowd out there. You might get about 50,000. If you know that Messi's not going to play, even as good as Argentina are, and with all the star power they were, I'd be surprised if you got 30. Argentina is Messi. Messi is Argentina. Messi is one of those guys like Pelé who transcends the sport in a lot of ways. People are drawn to him. People want to see him. If you know that he's going to be there, the tickets are way more valuable. The game is more valuable. The reason why I think that they were willing to host a game in between Argentina and El Salvador in Lincoln Financial Field on a Friday is because they thought that there would be a Messi and he would draw a lot of fans. If he's not there, it's not as viable. It's not as interesting. This is just another warm-up friendly for both of these teams. Honestly, it's not even a major match.
Mm-hmm. Mike, as we turn over to the National Football League, the Commanders, let's chat a little bit about that because Marcus Mariota signed a contract with the Commanders. Obviously going to be pretty much, I would assume, a backup quarterback because I imagine the Commanders are going to take one of the top players available. Quinn was sort of quiet during this free agent period. He signed a couple of people, Mariota being one. Your thoughts on what Washington, the Commanders, are doing?
Well, I mean, it seems like they've been quiet because they really haven't signed a big name. The biggest one just came while you guys are on the air, a $8.25 million one-year deal, six of it guaranteed to Bobby Wagner. He would be the most noticeable name probably that they have signed. But they have signed 14 players, But most of these are just kind of under-the-radar signings. Dorrance Armstrong, who was a rotational end with the Cowboys, with Dan Quinn, somebody he knows a lot about, they bring him in on a three-year deal. Frankie Louvu from the Panthers, a guy that they had at one point been connected to the Eagles. They bring him in. Tyler Biadasz, the center for the Cowboys, they bring him in. Dexter Fowler Jr., there's a guy who's probably whose best days are behind him, but they bring him in. He wants to work with Dan Quinn again. Clelin Ferrell, the former first-round pick, they bring him in on a deal. Again, more of a rotational piece, never kind of lived up to that first-round billing. Mostly this has been about getting guys with a known floor who know Dan Quinn or who are kind of familiar with the type of offense that they want to play onto the roster so they have those – they have bodies who are capable of playing. That was the thing that eluded them for so long. They just didn't have a lot of serviceable players on the roster, especially on the defense. They've targeted specific areas of need. They've gone out. They've upgraded. They knew they needed to get offensive line help. They've gone out. They've gotten that. They knew that they needed to get another running back. They went out. They signed Austin Eckler to a two-year deal. None of these deals have been – none of the long-term deals, the multi-year deals, have been for a lot of money. Most of them have been in the $10 to $12 million a season range. The ones – one-year deals to Mariota and now to Bobby Wagner have been a little bit more pricey, but at the same time, you know, they have – still, even after yesterday and all the players that they signed yesterday, they still had upwards of like $70 million under the cap. So they right. have the money to spend. They need to spend it because they need to fill out a 53-man roster. And when you sign players like Mariota or Bobby Wagner to one-year deals, that money comes off the books next year. So even if you overpay them a little bit this year, you get that money back next year. So
but they also have an obligation to spend so much money with the cap that they have available. You have to spend so much money. You can't just hold back and wait till next year. You got to do it now.
Yeah, and that's kind of what they're doing is they're getting some guys in who they want to have in the locker room for a couple of years. They're supplementing that with some positions that they know, hey, look, we're going to look for a young guy in the draft to come into this position. So we'll get a veteran in on a one-year deal. We'll spend the money. Maybe we spend a little more than people thought. I think the $6 million possibly rising to 10 for Mariota just seems like a bit of an overpay. But especially when you have Sam Howell on the roster, I know they needed to get a veteran in, supposing that they're going to draft a quarterback with the second pick, like we said. It just seemed odd to me that that was the direction that they went. You know, you've got I think that Sam Howell is better than Marcus Mariota, but they're both like quarterbacks. Neither one of them seem to reek to me of a third emergency quarterback, the inactive guy that you put on the sidelines in the case of break cases. So if you're bringing in a rookie, it just seems a little bit odd. But, hey, when you've got the money, you have to spend it. You need a veteran quarterback. Go out and get somebody. Even if it's a little bit pricey, you know you needed an inside linebacker. Bobby Wagner
right.
might be a little bit long in the tooth, but he's a guy that who has worked with Dan Quinn, knows him well, is a good locker room guy. I'm surprised that they were able to get him to leave the West Coast. He's been there pretty much his whole entire career. So,
Roger, you're up.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, obviously the Eagles didn't see a lot in holding on to Mariota. But I think the reason is that the rookie that they had this past year really impressed me during preseason. I mean, this guy, this kid, I forget his name, but he really looked good because you
Tanner
didn't hear
McKay.
His name. Also, who was it?
Tanner McKay.
The Eagles backup? I mean,
rookie? The rookie that you're talking about is Tanner McKay.
Yeah, that kid looked good, really good. So I guess they felt, hey, they don't need Mariota. But I'm just wondering if Sam Howell will wind up as a backup or for somebody that really needs a quarterback, they might give him a shot. What do you think about that? Any discussion of that in the D.C. area, Mike?
I think that that's definitely
an option that they now have with Mariota. Let's be honest, Mariota didn't look great when he played for the Eagles, but he looked like a guy who's full of existing in the NFL and filling in the gap, and he knows how to win a game. I think that it gives you the option if they draft a quarterback and somebody gives them a offer of, you know, a third or a fourth round draft pick this year, or even a third or a fourth round next year. They have a lot of draft capital this year. They're not hurting for draft picks this year, so they could even push it off beyond the draft and maybe get a little bit more. If somebody gives you the right offer, you trade him Sam Howell. That way he can go and get his career in as a backup. If not, you know, he's on a fifth-round draft pick salary, so he's going to cost them about $1 million this year against the cap. Like I said, you have the money. You can keep him. You know, I think then it becomes on game day, if they bring in a rookie, if they decide to start whoever that is, on game day you probably see somebody like Mariota as the number two and Howell as the number three. If it's an emergency and your starter goes down, at least you know Mariota can come in and keep you in the game. But if you have some time to prepare, you can start Howell. So I kind of think in either situation, Mariota's your quarterback number two. I just don't think that Mariota starts under most circumstances. Right. They also could say, hey, we've got a situation where we drafted Jalen Daniels or Drake May. We want to give them time to sit. You start Sam Howell, you let Marcus Mariota back him up, and you have your young quarterback hold the clipboard until you decide that he's ready.
Mike, let's switch again to the National Hockey League because you follow Washington as well, and they're a little bit of a shaky spot because you go Philadelphia, the Islanders, Washington. Washington with 69 points right now, and you got what would be considered probably the greatest player in the National Hockey League over the last 10 years. He's in Washington, but he's not going to be in the playoffs.
You know, this will be only the second time in his career that Alex Ovechkin will miss, if he does, and it seems likely that they will, miss the playoffs in two consecutive years. The first time it happened was his first 2 years in the league. It's a team in transition. I have to say, I think that Spencer Carberry is got them playing well. I think they got the right guy for the job. He's young. He's the type of guy that you might want to have in place to bring in this next generation of players, but he seems to be able to get something out of Ovechkin and some of the older players. Father Time has started to catch up with Alex Ovechkin. We've seen his scoring numbers dip. He's not as quick as he used to be. He's more of a sniper now. He's a guy who sits around waiting for the puck to come in so that he can unloose a shot and hope that he scores. He's not somebody who can necessarily create his own shot as much as he used to. They made a bunch of trades at the deadline. We saw Adam Mantha leave. We saw them trade Yevgeny Kuznetsov, who they thought was going to be kind of Malkin, their version of Malkin to Ovechkin's Crosby, but just he had a lot of off-the-ice issues. TJ Oshie's been hurt most of the season. He's making his way back. We don't expect it under any circumstances to see Nicholas Backstrom play again, although he kind of took a leave of absence. I think that hip resurfacing surgery has kind of ended his career. There's just not – they've got some young stars that they like. And it's just about bringing this in. You want to see Ovechkin break the record as a cap and retire as a Capital because of what he means and what that will mean to the franchise. But it would be nice if going into the season to next year, they can start to put a competitive team around them. And we've been saying for years that this is a team that they kept trying to run it back. They kept trying to run it back. They kept trying to run it back with the veterans. And those guys, each and every year, you tried to run it back, but each and every year, they got a year older. And it really just in the last 2 years has just totally caught up to them. So they're going to try and put a young core of players around Ovechkin to make a playoff push next year. And then hope, you know, after he breaks the record and rides off into the sunset, that they have some young guys that can kind of take this franchise into a post-Ovechkin era.
Roger?
Well, that's good to know because I watched that game the other night and they were talking about him. And the fans are out there, supporting him because of his record and everything. But, I wanted to get back to the Commodores. Let's talk about baseball because the opening day is 2 weeks from today. And how do the Nationals, what's the perception of fandom in the our nation's capital area?
It's a good thing that the Baltimore O's play in the same general vicinity because at least people will have one competitive team to watch this year. there was a lot of disappointment when they announced that the sale wasn't going to happen. Very, very, very limited expectations for what this team could do. You can be excited about C.J. Abrams. You can be excited about Mackenzie Gore. You can be excited about Josiah Gray and hope that they all come good this year and pitch and play with some consistency. The future of the team is still down in the minors. A lot of the people are excited to see if James Woods makes it up to the majors at some point this year. He was absolutely crushing last year in Double-A. He's had a pretty decent spring training. It seems like every time I get an alert, it's because he hit a monster home run. I think we'll see him with the big club sooner rather than later. But this is still a team that's probably at least two seasons away from being competitive. Again, we didn't see any big free agent signings, and they're not in a position where they need to give money to anybody. They need to get these young guys in, get a young core established, and then you can supplement them with some free agents. There's been a bit of an interesting situation involving the team and Steven Strasburg. We know Strasburg's not going to pitch again. He can barely lift his arm. But there was some expectation, I think, from the team that he would show up to spring training. He's been back at his house rehabbing. I don't even think he can rehab. The pain in his arm is so bad. But I think they said that they wanted him to be there to be around the clubhouse and mentor the young players.
Right.
Anybody who knows anything about Steven Strasburg knows, like, that's not necessarily his personality. He's not a dude who's going to be the most approachable. He's not, Uncle Fluffy, who you can pull up a chair and he'll tell you about the good old days and how to throw a curveball. That's just not who he is pitching, so he's not there.
Mike, the interesting point to me is that Washington has gone through such a lull. I mean, the Commodores, or whether they were the Redskins or whatever you want to call them, it's been a long, long time since they have really been competitive. The National Hockey League, as you mentioned, this will be 3 years in a row. Ovechkin, the best player, or possibly the best player in so many years in the National Hockey League, not even going to get into the playoffs. It's a little bit of a shame that Baltimore has sort of dropped out of the picture. I mean, Washington has sort of dropped out of the picture. Basketball team is struggling, whereas a few years ago, Washington was a major entity in all sports. But now they're almost a forgotten organization.
Your sentiments have been echoed. I mean, it is completely, I guess if you draw a circle south of Baltimore, north of Richmond, around it, and call this the D.C. area, it's basically a dead zone because not only do you have the professional teams not doing so well, none of the teams in the
Georgetown might as well forget playing.
Maryland, unless they go on a major run, is not going to be in it. American would need something special. All the team, the local G-Dub, all of those teams are out, so there's not going to be a team. The only team, if you could remotely call it from this region, would be James Madison. And if you know the geography of the region, James Madison in Harrisonburg is nowhere near Washington, D.C. You're talking about 3.5 hours south of here up in the mountains, Blue Ridge Mountains.
Yeah.
That's not
my, my son went to James Madison, and they won the championship game the other day to qualify for the tournament, which is a great milestone for them. Say there's some teams getting in to the tournament in the minor conferences that are a little bit of a surprise, but very interesting to watch. But we go back to what you're talking about. It's really a tough time in the Washington area to come up with a team you really want to follow.
The hope is that now there's some stability of leadership amongst the various teams that will help them I think that the Commanders, the football franchise, and Adam Peters has a vision. Whether you agree with it or not, whether it works or not, at least they have a plan that's clear, and it seems like it will actually work, and they're executing it, and it makes sense. Again, the Capitals, they have a plan to get better, to youth. They're not going to go with the same old, like, let's just trot these guys out over and over and over again. I hope that
right.
they can put together one more miracle run. Even the Wizards have started to break it down and build it back up. I think that each one of these teams is probably about 2 or 3 years away from being competitive. But if it all comes together, when we have this conversation in this time in 2025, the landscape could look radically different. And to be honest, it was what, maybe 3 or 4 years ago that the three of us were talking and looking at the landscape of Philly and scratching our heads and saying that this was about as bad as it could get, with the Phillies, the Flyers, the Eagles, all in the Sixers, all in the doldrums. And I think if the Flyers, I'm going to count on the Sixers to make the playoffs. If the Flyers do it, it looks like a season where we could put a calendar year where we could put all four major professional sports teams in the playoffs in the same year. So we all know that it only takes a player or two and a couple of seasons for this situation to completely turn around.
Oh, Mike, thank you very, very much. As always, we covered a bunch of different sports, which is a lot of fun. And we'll catch up with you next week, and we'll do it all over again and see what Baltimore's got, because Baltimore's gone.
You guys have a great week.
You too,
okay,
Mike.
Take care.
You know,
let's switch over to golf. The Players' Tournament's going on right now. We're getting ready to start tomorrow, and so we look forward to that getting started. But before we start about talking about the players and the quality of players, whether they're all going to be there, whether they're not all going to be there, the problem continues to exist and will continue to exist. The major press conference yesterday before the tournament, and Jay Mahan, who is the director of the PGA, met with the press very unsatisfactorily. And our next guest is a PGA professional, and Doug Hamilton. They're having all kinds of trouble with what's going to happen in the world of golf.
Well, I'm gonna shift gears a little bit on you, because PGA of America, as I see them, they're changing their logo, and the memo/information as a PGA member that I was given suggests that the logo change was inspired by trying to distance the PGA of America from the PGA Tour. I'm not really in support of such a logo change. My next email that I send goes to the president of the PGA of America. What they did was, and you guys, if you remember, we had talked briefly on the show about the different levels of PGA membership. Once you become a PGA member, there's three additional levels that you can get
right.
to, the top being the master professional. So I'm right below that as a certified professional, which in the old logo, I got 2 stars above my logo. They've eliminated the stars for every PGA member other than a master professional, which I think is, you know, what kind of ticks me off, you know what I mean, in terms of what I've tried to do from my educational standpoint to separate myself from those that aren't willing to do so. And I think it's a really bad maneuver. And then on the other hand, I don't really understand that if you look at a PGA Tour logo, what's the difference? I mean, they've never been alike. You know, have you ever seen, you know, Tiger Woods or Gary Woodland or Rory McIlroy wear a PGA logo on their shirt? No, I mean, you know what I mean? Like they're not the same as me. We're different people. We've done this differently, right? A PGA Tour member, you know, got his membership in a completely different fashion. He, you know, if those guys had to sit down and grind and go through the schooling and presentations and online and all that stuff, they probably wouldn't do it, right? So,
right.
But anyway, that's my quick editorial. Sorry.
Well, it doesn't seem like they were very, very disappointed that Monahan didn't come out with some answers, and he really delivered nothing in this press conference. You know, they compared him obviously to the National Football League when they have their get together before the Super Bowl and tell us, you know, what's going to happen, what isn't going to happen. But there's so much controversy right now between the two factions. And Monahan, all he says is we're working on a working agreement, which is in progress. But that doesn't tell you anything about it or what it is. And now the players are very unhappy. Stricker said that a number of players from the league would like to come back to the PGA. The big players, they, as you well know, the players is their big tournament. And they want to say that the greatest players in the world are there. Well, they're not there because four or five of the greatest players in the world are over there, you know, and leave. Right. They're not down to playing the players. So it's a very, very tough time for golf right now, and they've got to find a way to straighten it out.
I would tend to agree. However, you and I, again, on this show at some point in time in recent years, when LIV Golf was created and people started to jump ship and go there because, you know, whatever, fill in the blank, they got more money, they could wear shorts, they were shorter tournaments, there were less tournaments, there were team aspects, blah, 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 right? So all those
I'll start with money.
Yeah, of course. But they all made their choice.
Right.
And when they made their choice, they were immediately banned from the PGA, eliminating them from, you know, whatever, the following, Ryder Cup, President's Cup, majors. I mean, all these different things that they had to weigh their options to say what's best for my family, what's best for me, and they made their choice. And then you and I said, what if they want to come back? And I think the standard answer was tough shit, right? So you know what I mean? They made their choice, and there they are. So until they reach some version of agreement where there's, you know, cross-pollination between the two or unity, then this is what it should be.
You're right.
Roger,
well, you're
up. Say this. Yeah, I've been waiting here to say a lot of things. Today I heard on with Chris Russo, the Mad Dog, they had a gentleman on there that seemed to really be in the know on what was going on these negotiations and the animosity and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, in his opinion, it'll be at least 2 years before this gets settled. And if it's less than 2 years, he will be shot.
Okay.
And so that's what a quote-unquote inside guy or expert, if you want to call him that, now,
I wouldn't disagree with that, Roger. I think he's probably right. I don't see how it can be settled in less than 2 years.
And maybe a lot longer because you're right. They don't make any move. Now, when you talk about Jay Monahan and the press conference not saying anything, at the last, Commissioner Goodell's press conference at the Super Bowl, it used to be at 11:30 on Friday of the 2 days before the Super Bowl. This year, I believe it was on Monday, before much of the press got there, and it was all controlled. And you heard what Ira said, Don. Okay, he knew a guy that was given a question to ask. Okay,
right.
In a controlled environment, and the guy turned it down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're going to have more and more. Not only Jay Monahan, you got Roger Goodell wanting to avoid the crowd of the media like it used to be in the good old days. And now the league controls the questions that are coming at him. This is
same thing with baseball and basketball.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I don't know if in baseball it's it's controlled. I mean, the commissioner and hockey, I think they're very open. And we could talk about the hockey subject locally, because I was at a meeting last Thursday night, and a lot was talked about that with, this new complex that's being built near me. But anyway, that's...
Well, you're going to get a new hockey club, and you're going to get a new hockey club in Atlanta. They petitioned the league, yesterday?
Yeah, well, see, what happens is, Don, the head of the commissioners is a really very good guy, okay, the chairman. However, not a hockey guy. And, they don't know some of the stuff that has gone on. Because they said, well, the Flames, the Thrashers didn't draw. Well, wait a minute. They outdrew the Bruins when they left. Because a guy waited for me at the meeting. He said, asking why I said that. I said, it was a fact. Because you were taking it when the Bruins were down in their operation. Well, then you don't have fans. The Thrashers were outdrawing it. It could have been just that season. But that was a fact. But I asked the chairman, I said, when you met with Gary Bettman, did he say anything about how much the league got from that move of the Thrashers to Winnipeg? I think it was $7 million the league got. And so they don't care when a team moves because they're going to get a big chunk that just goes into the league coffers, okay? Has nothing to do with operation or anything. So anyway, that's the thing, and they're going to have a meeting I think tomorrow night I'm going to go. And because this is going to become a referendum and everything. But I want to get back to golf because I heard a lot about it today. You two guys are the golfers, and I was just relating what I heard from a quote-unquote reliable source.
I don't disagree, right? Doug?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, look, there's a lot of money involved in this. There's a lot of peripheral things with regard to, the players that are involved and all the people that are involved, the television. I mean, all these different peripherals that exist. Anytime you start talking about negotiations and contracts and mergers and whatever, that litigation is going to take quite some time, so that everybody's protected and everybody's happy on either side. Now, to your point of the media, I mean, look, I think this is kind of the new thing. I mean, you see all these conferences, whether it's, the year-end Ravens State of the Union, address that Harbaugh and DaCosta and all these guys go through, and they're only going to tell you glittering generalities. They're not going to give you specifics on, hey, we're going to go after this guy or we, like him in the draft or, the media is always looking for that little tidbit and that little soundbite that's going to get
that
them,
nugget.
That story that they're looking for, but everybody's
right.
Tight-lipped. They're only going to tell you, basic things and the TMI, too much information, doesn't exist when you start talking about those press conferences.
Well, Doug, let me ask you this. What I heard today, and I've heard this before, so it just joggled my memory. Look at the NFL owners and the Boston Red Sox owners, the owner, John Henry, that are invested into this whole thing on this agreement. I mean,
yeah.
You're talking, have they invested like $1 billion each or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, front and center here in Baltimore, I know you guys were talking about, the Washington area, DMV, if you will, with Mike prior to. I heard kind of the snippets of tail end. But, it's not a good time to be a Washington fan in any sense. The Nationals stink. The Wizards are terrible. The Capitals probably aren't going to make the playoffs, and they kind of bailed a little bit, and then the Commanders had a whole bunch of money, and honestly, I can't tell you that they've signed anybody legitimately that's been worth the bleep that, could probably help them moving forward, minus Austin, Eckler could probably do something, but it's a
good
time
to be a
Baltimore.
That's a biggest surprise.
No, that's not what I meant. I meant
right.
About all of these individual NFL owners and the owner of the Boston Red Sox, John Henry,
who have invested billions into this golf enterprise, as I understand it. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, no. I mean, look, there's across many of the platforms of sports, people that invest. I mean, like Magic Johnson's part of the, you know, Commander's ownership. I mean, there's
I'm just talking about the golf, you know, with this agreement, you know, with
Roger, they're investing on the come. They're investing on the come.
Okay. I got the impression that they've put a lot into this already.
Well, they have put a lot into it, but nothing compared to what they're going to put into it.
Okay. But it is, it is like Arthur Blank is one of them. I heard about all these different NFL owners that are in this. They've set up a corporation, correct, that has all these NFL owners and John Henry in it. I heard
I know John Henry's there, but I'll be honest with you, Roger. I don't know how many are in it. I don't know how many people are involved and how much money they've invested. I know that John Henry is one of the leaders of it, but I don't know. If you ask me how many of the NFL owners are part of it, I don't know.
Yeah, there's a number of them, and they've set up a name for the corporation. I can't remember the name of it, you know, but I was just really shocked. And it made sense to me with Arthur Blank because he owns the PGA Superstores, so he's got a real interest into golf.
All right, they're telling me we're out of time. Great night tonight, Doug. Thank you very much. I wanted to get to Baltimore because they're making some moves, but we'll do that next week. Take care, boys.
Yep.
Catch you next week. Thank you very much, Frank.
Take it over. God bless.
I want to thank everybody for coming on, especially Coach Vermeil and Trevor. You did a great job, and so did everybody else. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and police fire services. When you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, please let them know that you know they're there. These programs are also dedicated to those who've lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Kolkak, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Sergeant Thomas Bager, San Diego Officer Mike Henry, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Rick Childers, Charlotte County Sheriff's Sergeant Tom Wilson, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant James O'Connor, Philadelphia Police Department, Sergeant Chris LeVake, Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Orlando Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Josh Meyer, Nassau County Sheriff's Department. Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department. Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department. Lieutenant Artis Hope, Wilmington Fire Department. Lieutenant Jerry Fikas, Wilmington Fire Department. Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department. Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department. Deputy Mike Hargrove, Pinellas County Sheriff's Department. Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol. Trooper Joe Bullock, Florida Highway Patrol. Trooper Zachary Ben, Florida Highway Patrol. Sergeant Chris Fitzgerald, Philadelphia Sheriff's Department, Temple Police Department. And Sergeant Armando Mendez, Philadelphia Police Department, Philadelphia Airport Police. My brothers and sisters, you may be 10-7 at this point in time. At some time, we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, when the roads rise up to meet you, may the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields, the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your family always in the palm of his hand. Good night. God bless. Have a great week. And happy St. Patrick's Day, everyone. County Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. All units be advised, 1999's response was last emergency. May God rest his soul and all the souls of the faithful departed. Good night, Bob. We love you and we miss you.